Welcome to CD number 5 of the Copywriting Grab Bag Expert Interviews. This interview is with David Deutsch, who is easily one of the most successful and in-demand direct mail copywriters in the world, with multi-million dollar controls for Boardroom, Phillips Publishing, and other major league mailers. David's ads have sold literally hundreds of millions of dollars worth of books, newsletters, and seminars, both online and off. There are only a tiny handful of copywriters at David's level. And in this interview, he reveals how the best of the best copywriters think, work, and make gobs and gobs of money for themselves and their clients. This is a very rare and extremely valuable interview that can give you an enormous advantage in your market, regardless of what you sell or who you sell to.
How long have you been in the direct mail industry? When did you first start doing that?
I was in traditional advertising starting in about 1975 at Ogilvy and Mather in New York, and then at some other ad agencies, and then I discovered J. Abraham and became a born-again direct mail fundamentalist and kind of left the ad biz and hooked up with John Finn, who's kind of a copywriter's agent and a good friend and a great guy, and he hooked me up with Jim Rutz and started doing packages for Boardroom and Phillips and Investment and Health and all that.
I was working with Jim Rutz. I mean, his stuff is just amazing. I assume that he just taught you a whole bunch about this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Jim isn't big on theories. He really taught by example and by saying, this isn't good enough, try this, don't do this sort of thing.
Really? It's pretty black and white?
Yeah, I mean, there's no substitute for someone just keep throwing stuff back at you and saying, this is not good enough, and then seeing what they do. It's kind of like being a cook in a kitchen, and then the chef says, yeah, that's how you do it. You mix the eggs like this, and zoom, 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 and you go, oh, you can't get that for a recipe book.
Were you like an apprentice, or?
Yeah, kind of. He kind of creative directed the packages. Well, I did a lot of the grunt work.
Didn't John Carlton work for him, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
John Carlton was similar.
Now, you work for all the big mailers, don't you?
I guess I have worked for them off and on, yeah. Even when copy's a little more formal, even within that premise, you can still look at it and say, is this something I would say to someone? Maybe I wouldn't say it in exactly these words. Maybe that's a little more formal than I would say it. But still, basically, is this what I would say to someone across from me? If that makes sense.
It does.
You can still look at it and say, is this what I would say? It usually jumps out at you. It's like, no, I wouldn't say something like that. It would sound stupid and braggy and stilted and everything else.
If you were talking to someone, you would say your health. You wouldn't say the health of someone. You would talk to them like they're a person, but maybe you're just not using the same words exactly. But what you would say, it's not how you would say it.
Yes. Okay. Well, it's also what you would say, too. Would you pick up on this aspect of it? You know what I mean? If you had to tell your friend why you should buy this product. Someone once called Hey Midge or something like that. It's like you're sitting in bed with your wife and you're reading and you want to say, Hey Midge, look at this. This herb can cure cancer. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't say, hey, Midge, this revolutionary, you know, da-da-da has the whatever. It doesn't ring in a certain way.
What's the biggest mistake that you see beginner copywriters making?
Writing like they think writing should sound. Probably something that they pick up from school and, you know, writing in kind of a writing academic kind of a voice. So people say things in copy that they would never say one-on-one to a person in a selling environment. And if you kind of point that out, they become much better writers when they simply try to say the kinds of things that they would say to someone in a face-to-face situation. The biggest mistake is having gotten away from that, not writing like they would talk to someone. On the extreme end of the spectrum, you get someone like Gary Halbert, who is so far from an artificial written voice. His voice is so conversational and so him. It's the opposite of that.
Have you ever read any of Ben Suarez's ads?
Yeah.
He's interesting because it seems like he almost breaks all those rules, and he seems to almost go out of his way to make his almost look stilted sometimes.
Well, then you get into what you dress the ad in, what you dress the copy in order to get it past the screens that people have. And by dress, I mean not just how it's laid out and how it looks, but also dress in terms of, you know, making it sound like a press release or something like that.
I guess it's safe to say you don't really need to necessarily be a good writer to be a good copywriter.
Yes. You need to be, I think, connected to what John would call your inner salesman. You need to be connected to your own voice. And you need, of course, to be connected to the customer. I think a lot of good writing is a good mindset. Some of the best writers I know don't really think about the craft of writing so much. A lot of the good writers, when you try to talk to them about the techniques and what techniques do they use, I find they talk about the market they're writing to. You say, well, you know, what'd you do in this package? How'd you do this? And you want them to tell you how they used words that only end in the letter B or something, some very technical little trick, or they used a lot of verbs or something. But they say, well, I don't know, you know, I really looked at the market, and I saw that what they're thinking is that they're really frustrated with it, and they just talk about the market, and the market, and the market. And it's like, what do you think about writing? But you realize they're not talking about writing. That's where the writing comes from and springs from.
What are some ways that you get inside the heads of your readers and do that when you're preparing to write your ads?
Well, you know, the whole thing of trying to read what they read, trying to even do what they do. If they're investors, then you invest. So you feel the pain of the market's ups and downs. If you're writing a health package, it helps if you go out and buy some vitamins or some supplements that you would like to cure something that bothers you. Talk to people in the market.
Have you ever had a time where you had trouble doing this when it was a market that was kind of tough to crack?
Sometime.
What do you do in those types of circumstances?
Well, one technique I really like is sort of a little bit zen or something, I don't know, is to just sit quietly and try to get into the mindset of the person that you're writing to. Try to become that person. Try to think about what they think about. What's their day like? They wake up, you know, they have arthritis, or they wake up and they check the stock reports if it's a stock thing. You know, they see it's gone down. How are they feeling?
I don't know if you've done ads, but I'm assuming you have, but I know in that industry, a lot of times those books will have not just one cure for one type of ailment. It won't necessarily be an arthritis book, but it'll have 50, 100, 200 different cures or remedies for a whole bunch of different things. When you're doing that, how do you know who's reading it? Because it could be someone who has one problem, but you're writing about all these other problems. How do you approach something like that?
Just because you're writing about a cure for cancer or arthritis doesn't necessarily mean that person has cancer or arthritis. I think all of us would like to know about an herb that has the potential to cure cancer. So there's a certain degree that people read these things for information, not only because it's a disease that they have. Maybe it's a disease they feel like they might have one day, or they just want to know, or they have friends or loved ones, or it's just interesting to them. You know, they want to find out. On the other hand, you can't worry about that but so much in terms of the mindset. At a certain point, you do the best you can to make it interesting and compelling and powerful and all those things. The market mindset is something you do at the beginning to lay the groundwork.
How do you know which one to lead with, then? Do you test a whole bunch of different ones?
Yeah, that too.
Is that pretty common that they'll test? Maybe just the beginning is different, but then the rest of the ad is the same and you just test all of them?
Sure. Of course, arthritis is a pretty common disease, a painful disease. A disease that's also pretty susceptible to being improved by a lot of different herbs and treatments and things. Those are the kinds of considerations, you know, that go into that.
What's your process for creating headlines?
Just do a lot of them, do 50, and then pick the best ones. Within that, how do you generate headlines? There's a lot of different techniques. You know, you can be inspired by other headlines. I like to use some different processes that are in my book on creativity. It's based on different things that you can do to something to change it or to create something from it. Like, for instance, you can do the reverse. You can add a dimension of sight or sound. So I go through those different, I call them boxes. It talks about thinking inside the box. So the boxes that you put it in, you say, okay, is there some way I can add a dimension of sound or sight or a tactile dimension to this? It might become this herbal cure arthritis, and you'll be jumping up and down for joy and seeing the world around you and hearing wonderful sounds. And I'll try to bring in a whole range of sensory things to it.
Are you talking about the copy, too, or just the actual headline itself?
Well, you can do it with any copy, but you have just the headline itself. If I want to generate a lot of headlines, I'll just go through these different techniques. One will be add a different dimension. One will be do the reverse.
I read one of your ads, though. It was for that estate planning book. Is that one still going today?
No, the government tried to do away with the estate planning, phase it out.
I love the way that ad began. You're talking about that senator.
Oh, yeah.
He was sitting on that committee, and the one thing I liked about that ad, too, was all these really interesting bullet points and fascinations, because it's such a dry subject. It was really cool to see how you did that. And what are some ways that you use to turn features that are maybe boring or technical into bullet points like that?
I'd go through a whole list of, you know, do this, do this, do this, and I'd be glad to do some of those, but let me step back from that a little bit and talk about the main thing is you want to find some sort of interesting way in. You want to find the most interesting thing about it. You want to find something that is a juxtaposition or a contradiction or a seeming contradiction or something you thought was true is not true. So let's say there's something in the estate planning book about how if you don't do this way of doing some really technical thing in a will could have some very bad implications if you don't do it a certain way, and so do A and don't do B, and it's all very boring. But from out of that comes what many people do in their wills that could disinherit their children. But it's that kind of dramatization, I think, is another good way of saying it. So you dramatize it.
Is there certain structures or something?
Sure. Sure, it's like extremes. Like, for instance, you know, I talked before about different techniques. Extremes are good. What you should never write in your will. What you should always make sure is in your will. Whatever you say is the most important thing to put in your will. So you have those kinds of extremities people like. You've got things that people would think are true that aren't true. You may know that you should always do such and such, but did you know that there's a case where you shouldn't, where indeed doing it can be the worst possible thing you should do? See page 86.
Is that important to put the page numbers in there?
I think especially for that kind of thing, for a book, it gives it sort of a tangibleness. And some people do actually take the promotion, go through the book, and say, okay, is this there? Let me see what the answer is. This one, I really wanted to know. I just inherit my kids. Look this up. So, yeah, that is important.
Have you written ads for CDs or DVDs like that? Do you put the times in there, or do you just not bother?
That was an interesting idea, sir. That's a very interesting idea.
And you actually take an active part in the design of your ads, don't you?
Yeah, there was a time when I was even actually, I wouldn't say doing the design myself, but I was actually writing the stuff in by Quark. And so when I was done, I would have something that pretty much looked like the finished product, even though it wasn't as refined. A lot of times the photos couldn't be used because they didn't have royalty clearance or whatever.
Did the artists think that was a dream?
Yeah, the artists loved that.
just
clean this up and hand it in. I shouldn't say that. Actually, it helped the artist in getting a really good idea of what I was looking for.
What kind of tips would you have for someone if they needed to design either their own direct mail, maybe even a website ad? Is there any special things they should know about the design of a good direct response ad?
Well, I think the most important thing is to realize that design is at the service of copy, and that the design should be made to make the copy as readable as possible and as irresistible as possible. You want to make it easy on the reader. You know, you want to have nice big type. You want to break it up with subheads. You want to put things in boxes. You want to consider, how does the eye go? Where's the eye going to go first? Is it clear? Is it a big mishmash? And at the same time, don't be afraid of a mishmash. Mishmashes are nice sometimes because I think Teddy Kohler said that orderliness kind of makes people not want to read things sometimes. And kind of a big jumble sometimes can be inviting.
I know you do a lot of magalogs, but do you still do just regular sales letters, which is a piece
sometimes,
of paper?
Once in a while I'll do, which is pretty much just a letter.
But that estate planning book, you know, that has some pretty good design on it, but is it a good idea for someone to do that the way you had, like, the little cartoons at the top?
It's a little bit of a boardroom thing. Use cartoons, at least in their own publications. They do that a lot. And the designer for that, Don Pierce, used them throughout very effectively, I think. And it really helped enliven a pretty, pardon the pun, dead subject by having that. Yeah, I mean, lightened it up is exactly. Bearing in mind there are no absolutes about these things, depending how it's done, it could be pretty effective.
That's an interesting thought, though, because there's a lot of stuff that is kind of inherently boring, you know, that you have to write about. And most of us just make it plain Jane looking, or like a Gary Halbert style. But I wonder about that, because it was just one of those things I'd never seen before. I've seen magalogs, you know, obviously they have a lot of good design elements, but I've rarely seen them on regular sales letters like that. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was nicely done.
How much do you use your swipe file when you're working on your ads?
Oh, probably not as much as I should. In the beginning, I may look at some things and see if there's any ideas I can get, template kind of things or format things or ideas for ways of saying things or presenting things, but I'm really not very good at it. I mean, I like to have things to read from other writers, but I don't use them as much as I know I should.
Is yours a pretty big swipe file, or do you just have, like, certain ads from certain people and that's it?
Well, pretty much, yeah, certain ads from certain people. I've got, like, a notebook full of Benzinga stuff and a notebook full of Jonathan stuff.
You're still actively writing magalogs now?
Yeah.
Do you do a lot of the head-to-head type matchups?
Yeah.
Do you pretty much win most of the time?
Yeah, most of the time, but there's always those where you don't win. It's discouraging.
I had to ask you this because I've got friends, they all want to know this, and I know that Clayton Makepeace has written about this, but I said I'd ask you this, so I got to do it. But how do you break into that direct mail industry, and what would you tell someone like that? Someone who's already got experience, and they're just looking to go up to the next level there.
Well, I would tell someone if they want to do it badly enough that, I mean, it's not the sort of thing you kind of do on a whim. Study all that you can. Make sure you've read all the good courses. You know, Benzabenga's stuff and Clayton's stuff. You know, read all the books and studied mailings from the big mailers. Know what a Jim Rutz piece is and why it's good. Know what Agora is doing, especially within the field that you want to get into, if it's investing. Certainly you want to know what Agora is doing. If it's health, well, then you want to know more what Boardroom's doing and what Healthy Directions is doing and people like that. But, you know, have a good knowledge of what's going on now, what the history of direct mail info products are. Know why something isn't going to work now because it's what they were doing 5 years ago. Know how it's evolved over the years. And at that point, when you're ready, it'd be nice to have a mentor or someone that was helping you with the copy. I think that's pretty essential.
Kind of like you had Jim Rutz help you.
Yeah, like I had Jim Rutz, and I know John Carlton has a coaching program.
Who would they contact? Either to find someone like that or maybe just to try to do a mailing or try to get their shot at a control or something. Would they just call the company up and ask for the person in charge of that?
Yeah, they can offer to do a renewal series or something that's not quite as big a commitment for the company as giving you an acquisition package to do.
Do you have to show them basically that you know how to write and maybe they'll give you a shot at something like that? Or is it pretty hard?
Well, that's pretty hard. I mean, that's always very helpful, though. Show them that you can write. To have stuff. It's a very difficult thing to find people that can write, of those people that can write, to find people who can write the sort of thing that the company does, of those people that can write the sort of thing that the company does to be able to write a whole package from beginning to end, and then to be able to do it on time, and to be able to do it that it will beat whatever they're doing now, or at least stand up to competition from the Jim Rutzes of the world.
Well, so somebody like that, then, they think they're ready to take that step. Maybe they could just contact a company that writes or does products that they're already pretty good at writing and say, could I do a renewal piece or something just to get my foot in there? And
yeah. Well, let's just say I feel like I could beat this package that's in the mail now. Can I take a shot at that? I don't want anything up front. Just give me the royalties of whatever.
They don't lose anything that way.
They don't lose anything, yeah.
Except maybe the test, whatever that is. But then,
yeah, the test and the time they have to spend with you.
Yeah, I can see that. But I just know certain people who just, how do you do that? How do you get in there? I told them, as soon as I talk to you, I'm going to ask. But I think you simplified the process quite a bit.
Well, that's good.
Because they don't know. They think they got to find, what was his name, John Finn?
Oh, yeah.
And get in there, and I'm sure that helps. But
I just think it's so important to find someone that you can study with.
Now, you're going the direction of self-publishing right now, right? How's that going for you?
That's going good. I've got that creativity course. It's out of print right now. It was a book that was sold as a course with CDs and workbook and stuff. And I'm really trying to figure out what my next step is in terms of relaunching that, doing a coaching club of some sort, maybe doing some sort of an e-letter.
I know there are people out there who would just love that because there's only so many real pros out there, and you're obviously one of them, and Doug Deanna and Gary Benzabenga. I mean, when you guys say something, people listen. Well, it's true. I mean, you guys have the real, raw, in-the-trenches experience with so many different products and markets. It's unbelievable. How important do you think it is for copywriters to have fresh and original ideas for their ads as opposed to just cutting and pasting?
Well, I think there's a lot of things in between totally fresh original ideas and cutting and pasting. You know what I mean? A lot of gradations in between. I think it does work well for some people. It depends on the market you're going to. It's not going to work for the Agora and Boardrooms and Healthy Directions and Phillips level, but it may be very helpful to a small to medium-sized client. I think a little bit of the danger with that is that if you're doing more than just using a format, you know what I mean, being inspired by something or saying, okay, I see what he did here. Here's an example. There's another example. And then he says this kind of thing. So I'm going to do an example, and I'm going to say this kind of thing. And then I'm going to appeal to the greed and then a little bit of altruism. You know, whatever. There's a lot of different levels at which you can swipe something, let's say. Be inspired by it. But if you're really just changing word for word, I think the problem then is every marketing situation is so kaleidoscopically unique. It changes. The markets change. You know, you're going to do it to a different market. You're going to do it at a different time than the original was written. You're changing so many variables. So that which worked for the original situation just may be inappropriate for another market at another time.
I want to talk a little bit about, because you're big, obviously, on problem solving, the creativity part. I mean, you wrote a whole product about it. And what are your ideas when you're trying to create your sales letter hooks or the story? Because I'm amazed when you guys do those magalogs, how many different things you got going on in there. Every page has two or three different stories going on. Right. How do you do that?
Well, you know, sometimes in a magalog, to a certain extent, it becomes like journalism. You know, you're writing articles, you're doing like a Time magazine kind of a thing. I think the creativity comes more, and this may indeed be what you mean, more in the aspect of how do you present it in an interesting way? What's the hook? How do you get into it? How do you do a headline that is going to attract attention and that will stand out?
There's so many headlines in those, too. It's not like you're just creating one headline. You're creating, I don't know how many, dozen or so?
Yeah, dozens and something like that, yeah.
And then you have the running narrative, and then you have all those sidebars. And how long does it take to write something like that?
Oh, about 120 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not bad. I mean, I thought it would take longer than that, actually. Well, maybe because it just seems so daunting.
Well, it does sometimes. Yeah, it is daunting. I remember the first time I looked at a Gary Benzavenga magalog. You just sort of look at it, and you see, okay, you take it apart, you deconstruct it a little bit. So he does it. He's got this, got the right narrative, it box on this, box on this.
Are they all pretty much the same format, then, as far as that's concerned, magalogs?
Well, I don't know if it's the same format, but there's certain things that they have in common.
You know, most of us look at those, and we're just like, how the heck? I mean, it almost looks like multiple people had to write it. I don't know, you guys do it, what, within a month? 2 months?
Well, 2 months, 3 months.
Do you do a couple of those a year, or two or three a year?
Yeah, maybe a little more than that.
How much time do you take off between doing those? Like a big vacation?
You know, that's the trouble with those things. Sometimes you have to commit to them a little bit in advance. And so one takes a little longer, but you got to begin the next one. And I'm not very good at scheduling, so I have time off in the middle. I should probably be a little more disciplined about that.
Wow. So do you start with your headlines and then just go from there? How do you work on that? What's your process like?
Oh, gosh. It's like a boardroom package. I start with the bullets, you know, the fascination. And kind of build it from there and maybe group them into articles or what I want to do with them. And, you know, sometimes the headline comes first, sometimes the body copy comes first for a sidebar.
You were saying before when I was telling you about how people wanted to know how to get into the industry, and you were like, well, why would they want to? Is it starting to become less profitable for copywriters to be in direct mail now just because of the economics of it?
I don't know. You know, there's always new opportunities. Things change. There's so many opportunities now for direct mail, for copy over the net. Different ways of getting customers, different ways of getting the most out of customers that people have. It's not quite the old model anymore of send out the magalog and get subscriptions or get orders for a book.
Are they starting to send people online now to those? I've seen these sort of magalogs online. Have you done any of those?
I think some things that I've done have been converted into.
Oh, really? So you guys actually write them, or at least in your case, you write them as a direct mail and then they get adapted.
Right, adapted.
The one I'm thinking of, I'm pretty sure, is a Clayton Makepeace one. It was really cool looking, the way they did that. Looked like a magalog just stuck on the internet, and then instead of turning pages, you're just going to links. And I just thought that was really interesting, and I'm wondering if that was a new trend that you've seen happening.
Well, certainly putting things on the internet is a new trend, a new way to go, and linking to the internet.
You see that kind of as the future of that, like maybe they're just going to use the online to drive people into more of a relationship and then send them the magalogs, or is it still going to be the same way, do you think?
Well, I think it'll work both ways, yeah. Some people they'll always send mail to, but sometimes there'll be an interplay between the two mediums, a pretty profound interplay between the two mediums.
So it just seems like with all these different medias that copywriters have to start becoming better problem solvers, you know, how they're going to make something work. What are some tips on problem solving? You know, what can people start doing to become better problem solvers?
Well, I think the first thing is to acknowledge that you are a problem solver and that there is a problem that needs to be solved and to define what that problem is. A lot of people, I think, go into solving something or doing something and they don't really very clearly define what it is that they want to do, what the solution might look like, what the problem is, clearly defined. I think the more clearly you can define something, the more you will program your subconscious brain to look around for a solution.
I know you're at least thinking about creating a publishing business there. How far along are you on that? What kind of products can we expect to see from you?
Well, as I said before, I think thinking of what I want to do in terms of the creativity stuff and in terms of the copywriting, whether that'll be a bigger product that includes both, whether that'll be a coaching thing to go along with it. You know, there's so many exciting opportunities for these things, so many different models that people have. You know, John Carlton's got a certain model for what he does, and Clayton's got a model for what he does.
Now, do you take copy clubs on, or how open are you to that sort of thing, to taking on clubs?
No, it's not something I really do at this point. As I say, maybe at a point in the future, I would have kind of a coaching club, and that may involve some clubbing within that. As we discussed, I'll try to have a link that I can give you to at least something that can take names if people are interested.
Are you going to start doing more interviews like this?
Probably. If I can get my product together, I may do so. so.
Now, you got the rights back to that, right? They can't get it through Agora right now?
Right. That website is not active.
David, I really appreciate you doing this.
My pleasure. No, it worked out fine.
For more rare copywriting secrets and interviews like this, go to bensettle.com.